Welcome to Mom and Up.
With your co-host, developmental psychologist Dr. Marty Erickson and Dr. Aaron Erickson, maternal child health specialist and nurse practitioner.
Here's my grandma, Marty. And here's Aaron, my mom and Nana.
Welcome to Mom Enough. I'm Aaron Erickson here with my mom, Marty, and I'm really excited to have our guest on today talking about nutrition. Our guest, Cindy Lockhart, is a registered dietitian, and she's trained in both integrative and functional nutrition. She has over 25 years of experience helping families optimize their nutrition and lifestyle habits. She's the founder of Wellness for Women, and I actually, in the nature of full disclosure, have seen her as a client, and I really appreciated her insights. She's a working mom and wife who understands the stress women face and how it affects their overall health and hormone balance. Cindy spends a lot of time experimenting in the kitchen and gym and believes healthy foods should be quick and easy, while exercises should take minimal time but offer maximum impact. And I totally love that approach. That makes great sense to me.
Then you can sit around for the maximum part of the day. Well, welcome, Cindy. I'm glad to meet you. Aaron speaks so highly of you, and so it's a treat to have you with us. I'm going to start out with a really broad general question. You know, we are often told to eat healthfully, and yet it's not always easy to know what that means, and in part because information, research information changes, people come up with new findings, and so what we learned last year doesn't always completely apply this year, and I think that's kind of hard. How would you define healthy eating in general? And also related to that, I know there's a lot of talk these days about foods as medicine for our physical and mental health. So say a little bit about what that means as well, because that's a very popular concept, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And it's such a broad topic. And really, when you think about that, even my husband to this day, we've been married 28 years, and he'll still say, now what are we going to do? Because it is a science. It is evolving. It's emerging. So we're constantly learning something new. But I think there's some really key core foundations that we can implement that will really help. But in regards to food as medicine, just knowing that food is information. It basically tells every cell in our body how to function and how to work. So it really has a power in regards to preventing and treating disease. And it also helps to express our genes. So that's one of my favorite things to talk with clients about is if they have a high family history of heart disease or diabetes, I tell them the good news is you're not destined to have that disease. It's a matter of how you live your life, in particular your nutrition, that will either increase or decrease that expression of your genes. So it really is powerful as medicine. And then in regards to healthy principles, really thinking about whole foods. So foods that are on the perimeter of the grocery store, we've always heard that, shop the perimeter, but really things that don't have labels. And if they have a label, there's one ingredient, or maybe three that you can identify and pronounce. So that's where we get into troubles when we get into the inner aisles and there's all these snack foods and all these processed foods that have a lot of what I call fake ingredients. It's really hard for the body to identify those and know what to do with them. So really thinking about whole unprocessed foods, limiting the packaging, and especially sugars. So when we talk about sugar is going to come up probably a couple times today. It's one of the most inflammatory foods, and it really disrupts our blood sugar regulation. We know that as a general rule of thumb, we should be having 6 teaspoons as a woman, 9 teaspoons as a man. If we look at 1 20-ounce soda, which a lot of our kids and even adults are drinking today to stay awake, is about 17 teaspoons.
Wow.
So we've exceeded several days in just one beverage. So it's easy, you know, and that's what we have to think about is our hydrational choice.
Mm-hmm.
So water is the most important nutrient. That's what fuels our body. We're primarily water. So it's looking at what are we drinking? Is it water? Is it soda? Is it juice? Is it Kool-Aid? You know, all these things that have a lot of sugar in them.
Yeah.
So then also the other thing I just wanted to mention in regards to healthy habits is I like to use a plate method. Like instead of counting calories or counting grams, just look at your plate. Where you're going to get the most magic in regards to food as medicine is plants. So really think of the rainbow when you're shopping for vegetables and fruits and make sure half of your plate is full of those. And then have some form of high quality protein and healthy fats. Those are going to be the best way to give our body what it needs to function.
So I think this is really important because when I was growing up, it was the fat-free fad. And I remember we used to buy Snackwells.
Oh, yes. Oh. I was there too.
Devil's food cake cookies.
Yes.
And that was
true. We got that idea from my parents. Yeah. And oh my gosh, they gave you the worst gas any human being could ever have.
Yeah, they might have had like olein or something.
Oh, yes, they had all the, yeah, the fat replacement.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh,
that gave you diarrhea and other things. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is a really interesting shift. And I tell my patients in my practice as a nurse practitioner, that, you know, your body needs fat. If you think of your cell membrane, it's a phospholipid bilayer, which in short means fat.
Yes.
And our brains need fat.
Yes.
And so you see all these, for example, for people who are unable to breastfeed, you see these formulas, they say, with DHA, which is really important for babies and for adults' brains. Right. And so, you know, when you have people on these extreme fat-limited diets, they're not going to be functioning as well. And so I'm so glad you brought that up, that we went through this phase growing up where, I mean, we ate sugar and fat-free.
Yes.
And I'm imagining that probably if we'd had the fat with the sugar, maybe it wouldn't have been as bad in some ways, because it's like this sugar is, you know, it's just pure sugar. And I don't know, it seems like fat would change the digestion of that somewhat. I don't know if that's a fact, but it seems like it.
I think that's a good point, but it depends on the type of fat. So, I mean, okay. The healthy fats are going to be things like olive oil, coconut oil, avocados, olives, nuts and seeds, not like your processed fats. So I think of like Snackwells or some of those processed foods, again, are going to have what's called trans fat. Yeah. So that, if you put that with sugar, that's like the double evil, because actually one molecule away from being plastic. So our body really doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and these different oils, I mean, there's so many options out there now where you can go to the, where they used to just have like, you know, I don't know, canola oil or some kind of generic vegetable oil. And then they had maybe olive oil. And now you can get grapeseed oil. You can get avocado oil. Yeah. And walnut oil. There's so many options. So you can switch it up.
Yes.
Well, and we did eat a lot of fruits and vegetables and a lot of nuts and things like
that's
that
great.
When the kids were growing up, so we didn't live on Snackwells, but we did.
No,
we did
just every once in a while.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I do have a funny thing to say. So my mom was actually pretty strict about, you know, we didn't have a lot of like sweets or junk food around. And so we did have Cheerios, and there was a little glass jar with the silver, you know, the metal lid of sugar in the cabinet. And so because we never had sugary cereals, I would like just pour that on there, which is so terrible. I mean, I don't think my mom even knew. My brother and I would be like,
I learn a lot of things
pouring
on this
the sugar.
Actually.
Yeah. We just pour the sugar in there, which is, you know, in some ways, I'm like, it probably would have been better just to have like Honey Nut Cheerios, because it would have like a discrete amount of sugar versus the gobs we were putting on.
That's funny.
Yeah. Well, so if they're eating healthy, is there any reason kids should take daily multivitamins? I think most moms can relate to being in the grocery store and kids wanting, you know, when I was growing up, it was Flintstone vitamins. And now it's like the gummy vitamins. My kids devour those. Sometimes we'll buy like gummy vitamin D, which I do give them in the winter. But, you know, they're just like filled with sugar. And so do they really need a multivitamin?
And that's a really good question, too. I mean, I think if you've established a good foundation, like it sounds like you did for the most part in your household, then you may not need to. So if you're a healthy child, you're following a healthy whole foods diet, you might be okay. Whereas, you know, they did a study back in 2018, and what they found is that infants were low in vitamin D and E and iron. Toddlers were low in fat, fiber, potassium, D and E. And so if we're deficient or insufficient, then it's probably a good idea. So remember, we don't want to use it as a Band-Aid. because it's not going to mask a poor diet. That's going to be our first priority. But it can fill the nutrient gaps that we're not getting for a variety of reasons. So basically, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends it for specific populations. So if a child has anorexia or their failure to thrive, if they're on a fad diet or they're going through food jacks where there's only a few foods that they're going to eat, so they're missing out on a lot of the broad nutrients from other foods, or if they're following a restrictive diet, it might be related to the family or themselves, like a vegan or vegetarian diet, or if they have chronic disease or high stress. So what that's kind of interesting is even with the stress component is we do know that that depletes a lot of our critical vitamins, especially B vitamins. So if they have any type of parental neglect or abuse, they might benefit from a supplement. But I think with the supplements too, thinking less is more, because there's a whole bunch of options out there. So where do you start? So to your point, yes, the gummies or the gumballs taste great. Why? Because they're chock full of sugar. And that takes the place of a lot of the nutrients. So we are not as high in nutrients, but we're high in the sugars. So looking for one that's lower in the sugar that you know your child is still going to eat well. We've like through my practice, we've tried several different formulations and a lot of different chewables. And the kids didn't like them because they were too tart, because they were used to sugar. So it you know, you want something that's lower in sugar, but that also they're going to actually eat and take.
My mouth just waters with the word tart.
Yes.
Well, and with vitamin D, which is such – it is – a shortage for a lot of people of all ages. I mean, certainly older people don't absorb it as well, and the absorption is affected by the other things you're eating. And you know, we live in a climate where you're not getting a whole lot of warm sunshine in many parts of the year. So, but you know, other than older people who may not absorb enough from the sun, getting our kids outdoors more would help that, wouldn't it? The vitamin D deficiency.
That's a really good point, too. So, I mean, here in Minnesota, it's like we might have a three-month period of time where if we are out in the sun at the peak time, we may get enough vitamin D for those months. But otherwise, we don't. And, you know, kids today especially aren't out. And adults, oh my goodness, we go from work to home to work to home. So we're barely outside at all. And if we're outside, we tend to use sunscreen because we don't want to get skin cancer. So then we're actually blocking that vitamin D. So there's so many different factors, like where do you live? How often are you outside? Is it with or without sunscreen? Mm-hmm. So all of those do take a part. So I really recommend getting vitamin D tested twice a year. Mm. Just know what your levels are. Yeah. And then and to your point, you talked about, are we even absorbing it? So whether it's food or supplementation, we're not just what we eat or take, we're what we absorb. So that comes back to how the gut's functioning.
Yeah.
And most... every American has trouble.
Yeah. And also with genetics digestion. Because of, you know, methylation, yes. Which I'm not going to go into details about, but that you look at the vitamin D receptors, some people genetically are less efficient at, you know, the processes required to make those receptors. And so, you know, that's kind of more along the lines of what I do in my practice is looking for, are there genetic markers that you actually are someone who really, really needs to take this all the time? And in the, you know, of course you just check the levels because genes are not destiny.
And
if they have like excellent absorption and they're really healthy, otherwise they may not need it, even if they have a genetic kind of predisposition to that.
Absolutely. And I think it's really important too, that if someone is taking a multivitamin, that they should let their doctor know.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think a lot of times we think that, oh, it's natural, I don't need to say anything. Or you don't want them to ridicule you or judge you. And so we don't tell them. But I think that's the most important thing, especially with our kids.
I'm really glad you brought that up because, you know, people often think because it's available over the counter that it's totally safe. And actually, correct. A lot of supplements have significant adverse reactions, interactions with other medications.
Correct.
So that's, I'm glad you brought that up.
All right. Well, there are lots of specific questions that I'm dying to ask you too, but I want to get to one big one that I think is going to be of particular interest to all those busy parents out there listening. What about busy parents with very little time to do food prep? And what can you suggest to ensure that they and their children are eating healthfully? And even though I'm an empty nester with just my old husband and I, you know, we've been married 49 years, so even ahead of you with your 28, which is impressive. But what kinds of easy things can you do to really have that plate that looks the way it should?
Perfect. And I think that's important. And one thing I want to definitely use as a caveat is I'm all about simple, because I will not spend more than 30 minutes in the kitchen, but God. I'm all about ease. So I grew up, unlike you, I grew up on processed foods and packaged goods and frozen dinners and Little Debbie snacks and all those things. So that was a convenience in a different way. But now what I've learned is I didn't feel good there. So how do I nourish my body? And it's through food. And so a lot of times we'll have really basic meals. I'm a big advocate of going online and finding recipes, at least something new once a week, just so that you're not in a rut doing the same thing over and over and over again, because that gets boring. But one of the best appliances, I think, is the Instant Pot. Every time I use it, I still am amazed at how quickly that prepares food. Because you can come home, not even know what you really have a taste for, pull something from the freezer, just throw everything in there, turn it on, and it's done in about half an hour. And you have a meal.
Yeah, so. I have one. It's a pressure cooker, yes. But it's not like the old kind that you put on the stove, although I do have one of those too. But, you know, they always make me kind of nervous because, you know, I mean, now they're more safe, but I know tons of people who have, whenever I tell them about the Instant Pot and I say it's a pressure cooker, they're like, ooh, yeah. But it's very, very safe. I mean, it cannot be opened when it's under pressure, but it's so quick. I mean, we make oatmeal in it. We make carnitas. We have like a couple of really good pork recipes, and we literally will grab the pork shoulder. We buy it when it's on sale, and we put it in the deep freezer, and we'll do like carnitas or this Cuban pork dish, or we'll throw chicken in there or just tons of vegetables and do like, I mean, you can even do like a really easy sweet potato puree on the side if you're, you know, maybe I'm doing a roasted chicken or something. And so it's so easy, and it's not very expensive.
No. Exactly.
It's like I've seen it on sale for even closer to $100. So.
Yeah. I think it's one of the best investments that someone can make for a quick and easy meal. And then we're big advocates of just taking frozen organic vegetables, throw it into a glass pan, drizzle it with some avocado oil or ghee, a little bit of sea salt or seasonings, and put it in the oven and roast it for half an hour. So that's, again, right from the frozen state. So you don't even have to really think about what you're going to do until you come home. But it's really just thinking about how do I get my vegetables in, or a salad. You know, they have a lot of the fresh organic greens that are in the containers that you can have. I like thinking about prep. Like, take a few times during the week to carve out like an hour or two just to do some prep work, especially like cutting up vegetables, because I think that tends to be the biggest trouble mark for a lot of folks, and so that you just have that ready for you. So then you can use that to just cut up and put in your salads. So that's the vegetables that we're talking about. And then, you know, having your protein, and you're going to have your fats in there. So that's an easy way to do it. But I'm also a really big advocate for families of younger kids is to make sure that you're just cooking one meal. So really try to step away from doing the shorter to cook type of approach, because that won't teach the kids how to eat healthfully and broaden their horizons. So that's one thing that we were very adamant about with our son growing up. And we always did the 3-bite rule. You got to have at least 3 bites, because you'll never know if it's good if you never even try it. And he has found he's got such a broad palate at 19 now that he eats pretty much everything. I don't think there's anything. He didn't eat Brussels sprouts, and now he does that too. So those are some.
And if you roast them, they're so good.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, yeah. You roast anything, any vegetable, exactly. That the natural sweetness comes out. So I think that's another one, too, for kids, is they a lot of times will have like a bitter taster. And so they don't do a lot of bitter taste, which are a lot of our vegetables. So if you use some dressings that kind of cut that bitterness, or you use the roasting technique on a vegetable, that really brings that natural sweetness out. Or smoothies.
Smoothies, and you can put so many things in them that you would never guess are in there, but they
all the food groups that we need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had Siri Pinter Daly from the Today Show. She does food. She's married to Carson Daly.
Oh, yeah.
And we had her on a few months ago, and she was talking about, she has a cookbook that's really quite nice and really aimed
really
at busy.
Yummy.
It's called Seriously Delicious, and it's aimed at busy parents and kind of includes a lot of stories from her own experience. But she talks about the roasted vegetables. She calls them crispies, and she always has. So, you know, her children, she has three kids who are fairly young, and her kids just think of those as crispies, and they're a big treat. And I'm just thinking about how we frame things as, you know, what is a treat and what isn't. And your son, McKinley, loved broccoli. I mean, for years, he would say that was his, I would ask the kids what their favorite food is, and he would always say broccoli.
Or I would say, do you want a treat? And he'd say, yes. And I would say, what do you want? He'd say, little trees.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. He always called them little trees. Yeah.
They're so
cute. But I think just the idea of, you know, roasting them and just calling them crispies, and, oh, we're going to have a treat tonight. We're going to have crispies. And, you know, how that frames your kids' sense of food.
Exactly. Making it fun. I think it's really important. And that's what I remember growing up, too. My grandma used to always make our food into a face or some kind of design or flower or something on the plate. So it didn't matter what it was. It was so beautiful and so fun. We ate everything that was on the plate.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's also...
It's a great way to...
A good way to introduce them to new things.
Yeah. So there's a lot of information on the internet and talk about inflammatory foods. What is the research on that? And when do people need to be thinking about, you know, maybe decreasing inflammatory food intake?
So that is... It's kind of a indirect relationship. There's a lot of evidence out there on how chronic... low-grade inflammation plays a role in the development of basically all chronic disease. There's a lot of research that backs that up in regards to how our diet can modulate that, so it can actually decrease the inflammation. But there's not a lot of evidence that's going to give us the correlation between an anti-inflammatory diet and a reduced risk of chronic disease.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yep, it does. Yeah. So I know, like with cardiovascular disease, they say a certain type of diet promotes inflammation in the vasculature and making you more prone. I mean, there's even models of this that show inflammation, and it's more like versus just, it's not just plaque development, you know, that there's, so that's really helpful to know.
Yes. And so I think with that though, I think that, you know, kind of coming back to what we talked about with the core foundations are, you know, things that we know that are more inflammatory are sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And then also processed meats, so things like bacon and sausage. And
oh, I'm so sorry.
Hot
hear
dogs.
That.
I know.
But
we're kind of in that bacon craze right now.
Oh, gosh, I love bacon. It's just so terrible. I absolutely love bacon. But you got me on
to... Honey, that's a sometimes food.
I know. And I do eat it sometimes. especially like the really thick cut extra crisp. It's the best. But you got me on to those Applegate chicken sausages.
Yeah.
And they're actually, I think, pretty healthy. And
because you bake those. So, that's a little bit different than your traditional sausages how they're prepared.
So there are kind of alternatives that might be a little better.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think the other one is, if you've heard of AGES. Advanced glycation end products. Mm-hmm. So that's found in a lot of your fattier meats. So a lot of the heavy red meats or even high fat dairy, but then also like with high temperature cooking when it gets charred.
Oh, okay.
So that can also be one of those most inflammatory foods. But a lot of what we talked about that is healthy and food is medicine, like the plants, those are anti-inflammatory. So we can help neutralize a lot of what we're creating.
Okay.
And is the research strong on that to really show a direct mediating effect in terms of development of inflammatory-based disease?
Yes, especially with the plants. So the phytochemicals, so the active components that are in them, and especially there's a lot on the cruciferous vegetables. So like your broccoli and cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, cabbage. So those, yes, there is definitely a lot of research. Otherwise, you're going to see a lot of single food correlations in the evidence. So whether it's wheat or dairy are probably the most commonly assessed.
For more inflammation.
Mm-hmm. Right. Versus there's some like elimination diets or plans out there where you take out several foods. So there's really not a lot of evidence out there yet that's looking at that full.
Yeah, that's
nutritional. And some of those studies, I mean, the little bit that I've looked at, it's an interactive effect with people's inherent characteristics, their genetics.
Genetics and ancestry. Yeah. Even like, you know, there's some evidence looking back, like just follow your ancestral diet.
Yeah.
And we really get away from that when we get into like our own countries.
Yeah. Oh, that's diet. Fascinating.
Well, and I think, you know, the whole thing about the plants on your plate, I think, is so important because they're so filling too.
Yeah.
And if you eat those first rather than eating all this other stuff first, I think about even when we serve appetizers, if we're entertaining or something, you know, what you put out as appetizers really affects the balance of what you eat. And, you know, if you're leading with nice fresh vegetables and, you know, maybe with a little hummus, that's a favorite at our house. You know, that's going to get you started and get you more full before you even get to the protein and the fats. And that seems like a good way to kind of lead with the plants.
It's a great tactic. I love that. Yes.
Yeah. My husband we both gained a bit of weight in the last few years. I hope he doesn't mind my sharing that, although it's not really a secret because you can't really hide weight gain. Anyway, every night after dinner, he has this like, just he craves some sugar, you know? And so, you know, he's always griping, I've got to not do it, you know? And so the other night it was really funny because I had purchased these blondies, which I wouldn't usually do, but I purchased them at a bakery because we were having company and I thought, oh, this would be an easy thing and I didn't have to bake that last part of the meal. And so he's saying, oh, I'm just craving sweets. And I was like, you know, I really have not been craving sweets as much lately. And then I was like, you know, except I bought those blondies and I was just like, oh my gosh, I have to have one. It was like I couldn't control myself. Meanwhile, my husband's cutting up an apple or something. And I like eat the blondie. I ate the blondie. That was pretty funny.
I've talked about this before, and so our listeners have heard it before. But it's my little guilty pleasure is to have a scoop of Talenti vanilla bean gelato, which I just love, and a melted spoon of peanut butter and half a banana. And I, you know, I kind of justify it because there's some nutritional value in each.
You got some fruit, you got some healthy fat.
Yeah, that's right. But oh man, I just,
it is so good.
It is so tasty. And I don't have to eat a lot of it. I put the peanut butter in the bowl first and just pop it in the microwave for about 30 seconds to just melt it. And then the scoop of the vanilla gelato. And it has to be that Tahitian vanilla bean, or now they've switched to Madagascar vanilla bean. I don't notice a difference. But anyway, it's that's my little thing that I justify because it does have some nutritional value.
Okay, but I have to say, I've never understood bananas with dessert because I think bananas are so sweet. I can't stand banana-based desserts because it's like having sugar with sugar. It's way too sweet.
Peanut butter is kind of salty.
I'd rather have raspberries because raspberries are, because then you can almost have like peanut butter and jelly ice cream, but no jelly. It's just fresh raspberries. They're kind of tart. And it balances out the rest of the meal better. That's just my personal opinion.
I like raspberries in the morning, but I like my bananas with my peanut butter and gelato. So
have a feeling you two are a little hungry.
We've been doing five shows today, and we haven't taken time to eat. So you're darn right we're hungry. And that we're going to get to a question related to that in a little while, too. But we have a couple of more questions we want to quickly ask you here before we run out of time. Acne is common in adolescents. Erin has three adolescents in her household. Not that they are all suffering from acne, but, you know, it's something that's on our mind. Is there any evidence to support a connection between food and those kinds of skin outbreaks?
There is. So acne is actually a chronic inflammatory condition. So that is very tightly correlated with diet. So there was a gentleman, Melnick, who in 2015 did a comprehensive review, and he found three key categories that had the strongest correlation in the diet. So that's a high sugar diet, which you've already talked about, dairy, because milk will actually aggravate the acne by increasing serum growth hormone and insulin growth factor number one, and also excess saturated fats and trans fats, as well as the imbalance between the omega-6s and 3s. So more of the inflammatory processed fats and oils compared to the anti-inflammatory omega-3s like olive oil.
So would this be like a really high amount of dairy? And I'm zeroing in on that in particular because I think about the calcium needs, particularly of pubescent girls. And, you know, I mean, we have such a problem in terms of bone loss for people at all ages and at earlier and earlier ages for girls who are not getting their calcium needs met. How do you handle that as a dietitian?
That's a really good question. So I think it depends. Like if they have the acne, then we may need to look at some non-cow dairy based, because a lot of your non-dairy products, like alternative, like coconut milk or almond milk, they're going to be fortified with calcium.
Okay.
They may need to take some calcium supplementation because you're right, that's their peak mm-hmm. bone building years. But if they're not dealing with acne and they're processing and using dairy fine, then there's no need to eliminate it.
Mm. Okay.
So well, I think it just depends on what's going on.
Okay, so it sounds like avoid dairy, avoid the
high sugar,
being mindful of fatty acids. So, you know, focusing on like cold water fish, walnuts, flax for the omega-3s and not so much in the dairy and grains, which are more the omega-6s. So those are really great suggestions.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about something else that, you know, when I was growing up, everybody was talking about breakfast is the most important meal of the day. And, you know, you have to eat breakfast. This is so important. It's so bad to skip breakfast. Well, now I read in, you know, both the scientific literature and in the media, all the stuff about skipping breakfast, intermittent fasting. So either actually fasting like for a day, a week or 2 days, or just doing the intermittent fast within the day. So you fast for 12 to 14 hours or sometimes even 16 hours, and then you only eat during the hours between that, which often means skipping breakfast. So what do you know about this?
That's an interesting topic, because I know intermittent fasting is relatively the new kid on the block.
Yeah.
And so there is emerging evidence out there, but I think there's still more that needs to be done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've done most of the studies on intermittent fasting that have shown really good results are on fat rats. So they have shown a decrease in weight, blood pressure, blood sugar, lipids, but it's not necessarily been consistent in humans.
Okay, that's really helpful. Well, I know some of the earlier studies were looking at ketogenic, so ketosis mm-hmm. being what happens when you're fasting after a certain point, your body burns fat versus and produces ketones versus yeah. burning sugar. But that a lot of those early studies were on kids with epilepsy. Is that
correct?
Yeah, with seizure disorder.
For keto. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for ketogenesis, which is beneficial for seizures. But it's interesting now to see this kind of being promoted. So it sounds like the evidence isn't, you know, we don't have enough to necessarily say like, yeah, skip breakfast. And I would think for me personally, and I'm sure there's a lot of people individually, you know, sometimes I'm okay with skipping breakfast, but other times it's like I feel like I can't function without it.
Right.
And so I'm sure it's really an individualized thing more than anything.
Very individualized. I think it depends on the age and it depends on what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think you know, I work with a lot of women. So a lot of women who have hormonal imbalances or have had a history of eating disorder, intermittent fasting is really tough.
Yeah.
So that might not be the right population to do that on. So there's different populations that might benefit more. Kids, I think, you know, if you talk about going back to breakfast, I think there is definitely strong evidence on the benefits in school.
At school, yeah.
When kids have breakfast versus if they don't. But then it also comes down to the quality. What is it? I mean, like a donut versus
donut,
you know, like a smoothie.
Donut is not breakfast.
Yeah. Right.
Donut is not breakfast. That's a...
Yes.
But it sure sounds good right now.
Years ago, inviting us over for breakfast, and it was donuts and coffee,
yes.
and I'm thinking, this is not breakfast.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, it's like it is for a lot of folks,
eggs,
though.
I guess, yeah.
I know. Yes. It was my favorite local restaurant for breakfast, and I'm not going to name the restaurant because now they've changed ownerships, but they used to have this amazing breakfast, and it was sautéed spinach, two poached eggs, whole grain toast. If you wanted it, you could get something else, and a bowl of fruit. And I was
nice
it
balance.
Was so great.
That's yes. breakfast.
And then yes. I would do is I'd go with this one friend in particular, and we would split the pancakes. So it's like we'd share this and the pancakes. So we felt like we were at least getting something. And they were really thick, like whole grain pancakes. So they were had like seeds and nuts and this sunflower butter. Wow. It was so good.
Yeah, that's why I say put like a nut butter on it.
Yeah, it was really good.
Okay. Enough of this. Okay. I'm so hungry. I can't hardly really stand it. All right, so I want to ask one other question, and this will not make me hungrier. What about probiotics?
Yes, so probiotics.
Do we need them? And if so, when? What's the scoop?
That's a good question, too. So probiotics are really those little bacteria, microorganisms that live in our gut. So the microbiome is all over our body, actually, but we think of it more in our gut. And it's so powerful in regards to our metabolism and crowding out pathogens, regulating motility, and metabolizing food, absorbing nutrients. That there's a lot of research coming in about the microbiome, probably over the last 10 years, and the benefits of it. In regards to probiotics, it's interesting. I see that changing over time. So it used to be all multi-strain, and now it's really focused more on specific strains for specific reasons.
Oh, interesting.
So just in terms of supplements, probiotics.
Yeah, so like they have lactobacilli or bifidobacteria.
Right, but even getting more specific, so like with, I think the most prevalent research is on antibiotic-associated diarrhea, but that's with lactobacillus, specifically lactobacillus GG, which is like Culturelle. And then in regards to IBS, it's Bifido infantis 35624. So it's a specific type of strain, and that's like a line. So there's specific conditions and specific strains that are now being studied. So it's do a multi-strain? You could. You know, we've got probably over 400 different strains of bacteria in our gut. So yeah, changing it up is going to be important, or depending on what you're dealing with, you might want to get a little bit more pinpointed. But there's also good food sources. So just really thinking about how can you get that in through your diet? So through fermented vegetables or fermented dairy, if you can tolerate dairy. So things like kefir or more of a cultured or Bulgarian yogurt is going to be more fermented and more rich in probiotics than just a traditional over-the-counter yogurt that has oftentimes too much sugar.
Yeah, I always tell my patients, you know, flavored yogurt is a dessert.
Correct.
I mean, it's got so much sugar. And
which destroys bacteria.
Yeah, so it's like feeds the bad bacteria.
Correct.
So I think, you know, thinking of the intestine as a garden, and you know, you can either pull the weeds by treating problems, or you can feed the flowers by, you know, eating a well-balanced diet with prebiotic soluble fibers. And
exactly, because that's a really good point, Erin. It's like if you want those good bacteria to grow, you have to feed them.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of your vegetables and fibers.
Yeah. It's not Snackwells. No offense to Snackwells, but
hey, I haven't even looked at a Snackwell for about.
Do they even exist anymore?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Hopefully, they were taken off the market. But you know, it was for a while that you could not buy them. They created a supply demand thing to get people,
you know,
hoarding them. It was just crazy.
Yeah,
it didn't take me long to figure out that's not the right thing I'm putting in my body.
Yes.
Well, we could talk with you all day because this is such an interesting topic and you're such an informed and interesting guest. But we have to end at some point here. So I have one more question for you.
Okay.
And this is, what resources do you recommend to make life easier and more fun when it comes to healthy eating? So I know we talked about the Instant Pot and ways to make meals healthier, but are there resources that can make things easier for us?
Absolutely. So, I mean, even just shopping, you can shop online pretty much from any store these days. So if it's getting to the grocery store, you can do that pretty easily from your couch. The other thing is with meals. So there's a lot of meal delivery systems. So it just depends. And that also gets you out of the rut of doing the same thing over and over. So you can either buy specific meals that have the ingredients and have the recipe that you just have to assemble, or there's even like pre-made meals that you just have to heat up. So kind of bringing that into your week, you know, finding a plan that allows you to be flexible with how many you can get. So depending on how busy your week is, those are some easier tactics just so that you're not constantly cooking. But the other thing I always tell people is like, if you're going to cook anyway, cook extra. Now, the problem in our house, I have the 19-year-old son who comes home from college, and then my husband. Anytime I make extra food with the intention of we're going to put that in the Pyrex dishes and we're going to have them for leftovers, they always eat more. Yeah. Like, now we don't have the leftovers.
That's funny.
You have to put the leftovers aside Correct. Before anybody even gets yes. to them.
Yes, and I still haven't figured that out. So hopefully yeah. one day I will carry yeah. through with that.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, my husband will make soup, and we have this giant kettle, and he just makes, like, he'll make six times the original recipe, and Perfect. Then we freeze it in those glass lock containers. And, you know, but the kids will get, so they don't like that soup then because, well, we've had that soup once a week for the last, you know, 5 weeks or whatever. No, not the kale not soup. Oh, you know, it's like, I love it because it's so nice to just come home and have soup on a cold night. And, you know, it's like makes it a little easier, but.
And that might be just adding something a little bit different to it
oh, that's
to
a
make
good
it
idea.
Seem different and then make sure that there's a fun side
yes,
with it. So just so it doesn't feel idea. Like it's always the same.
Yeah.
Like maybe put some blondies in it?
Yeah. No, but maybe so I say like, hey, kids, like we're going to bake bread tonight
yeah.
or something fun. You know, I mean, we don't eat a ton of bread on a like as our primary meals. It's usually like a little bit on the side if we have it. But, you know, making it maybe would be kind of a fun way to engage the kids in something fun.
Exactly. And trying to get them involved. So what else could we add to this or could we have with it to make it
yeah.
more enjoyable, more fun?
Like bacon. Well, thank okay. you. Yes. Thank you.
Now I'm
yes.
going to go make bacon and yeah. blondies. And
yes. Well, Cindy Lockhart, registered dietitian. Thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for tuning into this episode of Mom Enough. We hope you'll tune in again next week.
Content copyrighted by Marty and Aaron Erickson. All rights reserved. Visit momenough.com for an archive of all Mom Enough shows and many free downloadable resources on child development, parenting, and maternal health and well-being.
Do you think I'll have a show called Kid Enough someday?